welcome to TDF Talks, a fortnightly podcast from The Design Files, Australia's most popular design blog. I'm your host, Lucy Fagans, and I'm the founder and editor of The Design Files. Every 2 weeks, this podcast features an inspiring chat with a noteworthy Australian creative, from designers, makers, and artists to successful creative entrepreneurs to gallerists, architects, and more. TDF Talks is an enhanced podcast, which means if you listen using the Overcast or Pocket Casts apps, you will see images and links in your player while you listen. In today's episode, we chat to Sydney-based artist and designer Rachel Castle, whose cheerful range of bed linen, soft furnishings, and original artworks have been a firm favourite of The Design Files since our earliest days. Rachel grew up in country Victoria and originally studied PR at RMIT before landing her first grown-up job at Country Road. She then moved to London and worked at iconic UK design store The Conran Shop, before joining forces with friends to launch a phenomenally successful branding and creative agency in the UK. A change of pace came after Rachel had children and returned to Australia. Craving a return to creativity, she began making embroideries and artworks for friends and started designing a small range of products. There was never a grand plan, but before long, Rachel's brand, Castle, was born. Today, Rachel's business has a huge following of devoted fans and collectors both here and abroad. She works with her tiny team based in Marrickville in Sydney. Today, we chat to Rachel about the balance between making art and designing products, the importance of processing information before acting impulsively, and why she's intent on staying small. Welcome to TDF Talks. I'm here in the Northbridge home of Rachel Castle in Sydney. Rachel is an amazing artist and designer who we featured many times on The Design Files and whose work we adore. Rachel, thank you so much for being on our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Rachel, you originally studied in Melbourne at RMIT and you've had a really diverse creative career, but I'm really interested to know what you were doing way back at the start there when you first, I guess, finished your studies. Can you tell us a little bit about where you started?
Well, I grew up in a very small country town, and I think I got into my course. I recently found out that they have to take a couple of hicks, and I think I was one of them because I got to the big smoke and just thought, oh, my God, where am I? What am I doing? I don't know what I'm doing here. And bizarrely, I ended up doing a course which was about the most inappropriate course for my personality.
Really?
It was PR. PR, what was I doing PR for? I want to hide in the corner with a bag over my head and not have anyone talk to me. And I ended up doing this course which was all about being in the spotlight and promoting everybody's brands and talking the talk. And I did it quite successfully for about 15 years. And then at the end of that, I had my children and thought, oh, I can't do that anymore. That is not good for me.
But that basis of PR, learning what you learned about PR, must have been really valuable to you in what you've done since then in your own world.
I think everything that you learn along the way is applied at some point, and it's all, you know, any kind of information and learning and knowledge you can put to some kind of use in your career. But I just think it's bizarre looking back that if you said to me, what would be the thing that you'd really not like to do at university? What would be the thing? What would be last on your list? I'd say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I did.
That's so funny.
It's bizarre.
So you studied PR at RMIT.
I did.
And then you worked at Country Road for a bit. Was that one of your first jobs out of uni?
That was my first proper job. And okay. I worked with Carol West and Alex Wilcock. That's when Steve and Jane still ran the business, and everybody calls it the University of Country Road. Everyone worked there. It was such a great time.
Yeah.
So we really loved that. And then I moved to the UK and worked at the Conran Shop.
Yeah.
And then Alex, Russell Pinch and myself started a little branding business, which was an awesome period of time. We had some really amazing clients, but the business grew very quickly. Very, quite big and very quickly. And so in the end, it just felt like we were just HR. I was HR, just hired people to do the fun jobs.
Yeah.
And so sat in finance meetings.
Really?
Yeah,
I kind of remember this. I just can't imagine this side of you. Like now I feel like your work is so
hands-on and creative, and you're so connected to the creative process, and we'll get to Castle in a minute, but I can't imagine you having like that kind of office job type business.
It was.
Yeah. And that was in the UK, right?
That was in the UK.
Yeah. So tell us originally, only because I grew up in London, which is a little known fact about me, and I remember the Conran shop being a really big deal in the UK at that time, like when I was, maybe we were there at the same time, I was like
late 80s, early 90s.
Same. I lived there, and I moved here in 93 with my family when I was a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
But the Conran shop was huge in the UK, like really massive kind of cultural kind of thing in London, and was a big part of, I guess, driving trends in London in retail, I think. So what was it that attracted you to the Conran shop, and what was your role there, and has that time been formative in what you've done since then?
Well, who wouldn't be attracted to that brand? I remember at the time when I was just about to leave to go, and I went with Alex Wilcock was the buying director there, and he was also, I worked with him at Country Road, and he said, come over and work with me at Conran Shop. I remember this huge big, I think Terrence guest edited Elle Decoration.
Okay.
That came out at that, literally just the week before I left, and each buyer had their own double page spread, and I was so excited to go there. And we worked at Shad Thames, and Terrence lived upstairs, and we all worked underneath. It was just an awesome, they just got everything right. Everything was so on brand, but so eclectic at the same time. There wasn't really a formula, and that's what made it such a wonderful brand and a place to work. So I was literally Alex's secretary.
Okay. Yeah.
Which was challenging. We still laugh now, because the first week I was there, he said, I'm going to Paris. I need you to organize my travel and my currency. And I went, okay. So the day before he left, I said, here's your envelope and here's all your money. And he comes back and says, you gave me like 5 francs. Give me 50 francs, that's like 20 cents. Thanks a lot. I was so crap at that job. I tried really hard, but I really wasn't good at it. So then I started doing the marketing, and in the end was responsible for all the printed material across the Conran shops, all the shops, and all of the restaurants. So it's a pretty
that's
big
huge.
Job. Yeah, I liked it. I liked print. Print was good.
Yeah. So it feels like you always had that kind of design, a passion for design and skills in design, even though it's something you didn't study. Is that right?
That's right. I was always involved in that creative process. It was managing it or production, or I just wasn't the one that, I guess I was best at deciphering what the client wanted and what the creatives could actually deliver.
Yeah.
Because working with the creatives is as hard as working with the clients.
Yeah.
You got two people on either side going, there's no way we're doing that.
Yeah.
And the client saying, well, that's what I want.
Yeah.
So I think that being in that middle and trying to compromise that design was probably really helpful.
Yeah.
For me going forward. But I've always been on the shoots and sort of organized the creative, but never been the one that's created it, if you like.
Yeah. Until now, sort of. You're doing so much creative stuff now. So then you came back to Australia. Tell us why you came back to Australia and why Sydney?
Well, two children, two little ones, and a husband that I picked up over there, and I dragged them all back here because I just needed to be in the light.
Yeah.
I had enough of the dreary days as an Aussie.
Yeah.
I think you really need some sunshine. I do anyway.
Yeah. And then what did you do then? So what was – did you start to – is that where Castle and your own brand started to kind of become a bit of a twinkle in your eye? Did you start to think, okay, well, if I'm back here, I'm going to do my own thing now?
I never actually thought that. I never had a thought process. I'm not good at planning. So I was literally wiping the benches and sending the children off to school going, I'm going mad. I need to do something. I just started sewing things. I'd always done that at nighttime all the way through, drawn little pictures or sewed stuff or made stuff for friends. Nothing major, nothing that I would ever show anybody. And I just started doing it when the children were at school.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, I don't know, how does it happen? It just happens, doesn't it?
I guess so. I don't know. I feel like you have a very distinct style. It's surprising that you never sat down and had a plan for your product range, that it hasn't really just evolved organically.
Absolutely. And still now, there's no plan.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the thing that keeps it exciting for us. If we've got nothing for autumn, winter next year, we won't make anything.
Really?
So I hate that idea of going, oh, I've better put that in or fill that in.
Yeah.
So we'll have an idea. I'll say, oh, imagine that on a cushion. And someone will go, we have to do that. And I'll say, no, I've got other things to do. We can't do that. It's one of those things that we just can't help ourselves. We'll do it.
Yeah.
But it's certainly not a planned thing.
Yeah. It's interesting because I feel like that comes across in the way you communicate as a company and through social media and that kind of stuff. I do feel like you guys are really excited about everything you're doing. And I don't know, as a follower of your brand, that comes across, that enthusiasm. And I guess you can tell that if you're not excited about something, it probably just doesn't make the cut and doesn't get put out there.
That's right.
Yeah.
And for me, one of the only thing that I do have a plan about is keeping my company small. So at The Nest, at the branding agency we had, it was so big, and that happened so quickly that you just don't have a handle on your product or your creative process. So this business will always be small. And the amount of people that say to me, you could do this and this and this and all these big fabulous things. Yes, we could potentially, but that won't make it a happy place for me. I need it to be small. We need a small team. We make a few things every now and again. I can make a few things in my studio. That's the happy place. So that's always been, that will never change.
That's so interesting. So what does Castle look like today? Where are you based as a business and what does your team look like?
So we have finally got a big studio, which is very exciting. So this will be embarrassing to say, but I'll admit it. Last year, if we needed to find that box of cobalt penny round cushions, we had to pull every single box out of the room and literally look for that one box. Oh, well, there, yes, excellent, 30 left, and re-put 50 boxes back into that room. It was literally a room full of boxes.
Yeah.
So that's why we would say every now and again, oh, we thought we were sold out of those. We actually weren't. We've got 700 left because we've just had stock all over the place. But now we've got a very organized warehouse and I've got a really nice big studio. And there's literally four of us at any one time.
Yeah.
But two full-timers, myself and Simone, and then the other two come in and out.
Yeah. And so is it really so hands-on that you're all kind of like that tiny team packs and ships every product and that kind of thing, or do you have a bit of help with the dispatch side of things?
All of that's taken care of, so I don't get involved in any of that.
Yeah.
But this week we sold many, many, many tea towels.
Yeah.
So we were all on pack and wrap. If anyone gets anything sent to their billing address rather than their shipping address, that was me.
That's funny. And so I'm interested too in the combination of art and design in your business and in your practice, because I think it's a pretty rare thing that I guess you're known as much for your paintings and your original artwork as you are for kind of homewares and textiles and bed linen. I can't really think of another business where art and one-off art pieces form such a big part of a business. So how has that come about and how do you divide your time between, having a painting day versus having a designing or a bit more of a logistical day at work?
That is my greatest challenge with this business, is that really it's two businesses. If you can call your art side of it a business, trying to manage that time equally is impossible. But also that marriage between the two, that's where my branding, I think, comes in. Somebody that buys a $5,000 painting does not ever want to see any of those components on a t-shirt. It's just not right. So for me, keeping them both very separate but still under that same umbrella is challenging.
Yeah.
It's a good challenge, and the letter thing sort of, that really works. That transcends both. That's a really happy place for the artwork and the product to sort of come together. With respect to the paintings, I really try and keep those separate.
Yeah.
They are a separate thing.
And how do you make time to paint? Surely you've got a full-time job without having to ever paint a painting.
With difficulty.
Yeah.
That is so challenging.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get to – so my desk is at the end of my office, and some days I spend my time at the desk and I will get up and say, right, don't nobody talk to me at 4:45.
Yeah.
And then go, oh, my God, it's like an hour and a half. That's just not enough. It's challenging. Yeah. There are times, like anything, there are times when it's easier, but when it's really busy in the product, in the bed linen side of things, it's very challenging.
Yeah. And how do you work with the bed linen? Like, you've been designing bed linen, you've got a very distinctive, beautiful, colourful, cheerful style of bed linen that you design. How has that look and feel come about? And again, are you so personally involved in like quality control and the make, like speaking to your makers and that kind of thing too?
To get the product to market is so difficult. Yeah. If I'd known in the start how hard that was, it's tricky. So I started off manufacturing in Australia, which was awesome. It was so easy, but you can only print single width. Technically speaking, it's far more difficult to do a range out of Australia and sometimes impossible. You can't print a quilt cover. It's too wide. So that's why we started doing our sheets with the little cuffs. You know, we were trying to be as nimble as we could and to provide something that had a little bit of personality in it. But the bigger you grow, and if you want to stay competitive, you really need to start to manufacture overseas, and that is tricky. That's very tricky. So I was very much involved in the beginning. We've got a lot of really solid processes now, but it still requires occasionally for me to come in and, you know, start to negotiate with them about, you know, how things are going. So I will design the range with Simone, so with my right-hand lady.
Yep.
So we'll do all of that together, and then she'll go off and manage the production. That's generally how it works.
So on the one hand, you kind of design things and get excited about something and just do it because you want to make a beautiful product and you're passionate about it and enthusiastic about a creative idea. On the other hand, you've got these limitations production-wise and you are a small business. So how do you balance that limitations of what's actually possible in the production process versus just having a great idea and wanting to bring it to life?
Every single thing we design, we say, for example, really good example, if I design this gorgeous, you know, this beautiful artwork, to have it printed on a tea towel, for example, we would call it a tea towel in one of our little linen artworks, you can only do 7 or 8 colours. You've got, and then you've got a space within that space that you can, so you can't go to the edges, can't do this, can't do that. So you always start with the Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
And then if you end up with something in sort of in the middle, then that's a great thing. You just manage your expectations.
Yeah.
Over the years, you just know that, you know when to push it, you know when it's not going to work. You know, taking a risk on a product is taking a risk. So there's so many things that actually can go wrong before it even lands in a customer's home. And then even from there, you can't really, I find product really scary. I always think, oh, my God, imagine if that little bit of cotton falls off that tea towel and baby puts it in their mouth and find that quite, whereas the artworks are completely stress-free for me.
Yeah.
The painting, the embroideries, the prints, the tea towels to a certain extent, just completely stress-free.
Yeah.
So I wonder, why do I do the product?
Yeah, why do you? That's a good question.
I know. I ask myself that all the time. And I think it's just because, I think because I really do think about it, I think that that side of the business is actually takes up so much of my brain space. Why wouldn't you at some point just not do that? And I think I can get really bored. That whole idea of saying, we can make a sweater tomorrow if we want. Like, how can we not make that T-shirt that says Roger that we're making for summer, for when Roger comes out and plays in the Australian Open?
Yeah.
Those kinds of things get us completely beside ourselves for like a day.
Well, I think it's the challenge that often fuels you as a creative. And if it was easy, like if you were able to just be an artist and not, you know, manage a business and all the challenges that come with that, in a way, I guess you'd like it for a small amount of time, but then you would crave a challenge. And I think some of those experiences that really push you is where the magic happens. I don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I think I appreciate that so much more. When I actually get around to doing painting something or cutting out, you know, silly embroidery or something, I love that. I love that so much. And then I have to go back and do the emails.
Yeah.
The admin.
Yeah.
So I think it's the balance. I think it keeps the good bits really good, and the other parts just keeps me fired and challenged.
Yeah. And how do you go being a boss? Because even though you've only got a small business with a handful of employees, I've always thought in my business, like, no one really teaches you to be a boss and to manage people, and that can be a challenge too. So how do you navigate, I guess, that thing of having sometimes make big decisions and be the boss lady.
I don't like it. I don't like it. I come home and I say, right, nobody asks me anything. I'll do anything that anybody wants as long as nobody asks me a question.
Yeah.
It's challenging. I think having a person by your side, Lenny was and now Simone is, she comes everywhere with me. We go to India together. We make all our production decisions together. We spend literally the mornings together. And then in the afternoon, I try and be by myself. But having her, she makes a lot of the decisions. I'm happy for her to make a lot of decisions because you just can't do it all yourself. So I think having that one person that you share every part of your business with really does help.
Yeah. And it's the trust, I guess, that you have to cultivate in that relationship in order for it to work.
It's a tricky one. I'm so reliant on her.
I feel like this is a common thing I hear about small businesses, and mine was the same. Now I'm a bit bigger, so I've got a bigger team, 6 to 7 people now. But for a long time, I had a right-hand woman too, Lisa Marie Corso. And I feel like often a small business does depend on a bit of a right-hand person like that.
Absolutely does.
Yeah. They're the kind of the hidden heroes of small business.
And also just for you personally, just to go to work and not have to bear the burden of it all day, every day, all by yourself. But I do say to her, don't you worry about that. That's for me to worry about. I just need you to do the things.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true too. Yeah. I guess there's a stress that comes with being the boss or owning a company that, you don't want to translate or transfer onto your staff.
Exactly.
Yeah. We were talking before we turned the microphones on about Instagram, and I feel like you are amazing on Instagram and you're so genuine and authentic on Instagram, and I'm falling a little bit out of love with Instagram lately, I must admit. We were talking about that earlier. What is your approach to social media? I feel like, as you've said before, you're not very strategic in any way, but surely you've cultivated a fantastic community online. What are your thoughts on social media? How has it impacted your business, and what's your kind of approach to social media?
So social media for me is everything. Social media has allowed me to run a store 24/7. We have a lot of American clients and a lot of American followers. So it just, as social media has built my business for sure. And I include the Design Files as part of that whole online community of whether it's Instagram or blogging or anything that's online that's easily accessible to everybody that you don't have to go out of your home to access. That has really been, it's created my business and sustained my business. And 15 years ago, it just wouldn't have happened. You would have had to wholesale to, say, the Conran shop. This way, small businesses can create a range, get it to market, start to build some followers and some brand loyalty. So for me, I will always be super grateful. I love social media. Having said that, it's like a little toddler. It's like a little toddler that you get home at nighttime and you go, I just want to sit down, watch a bit of The Bachelor. But no, there comes that little thing needing some time and attention. So I think for me, the reason it sounds authentic is because it is. I go, you know what? It's the ad. Quick. It's 8:15. What am I going to say? And so often I say to my family, turn off the TV. What am I going to write about?
Yeah.
And they'll say, oh, we don't care. Just don't do it. Come, please just be rid of social media. And so a lot of the time it sounds very random and authentic because it is. And I think I've never sort of planned a post, never pre-written a post.
Yeah.
Because I just don't have time. So
yeah, that's interesting. My key. Well, I like that. I think that unfiltered approach is actually what cuts through a lot of the noise because so much of Instagram now is very curated. So maybe that's your secret. What's something you haven't done that you'd love to do?
The only thing I'd love to do one day, so when you lay awake at night and you think, oh, wouldn't that be nice? I'd love to write a book. Not a writing book, but just to draw a book. Just make it, but that's my print background, seeing all that beautiful print. And I love books. I love reading physical books. I love books, basically.
Yeah.
And I love magazines and I love a beautiful double page spread. And I just love that. I love text and imagery together.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I would love to do, I don't know what that will be. I don't know. Maybe one day.
That would be beautiful. It makes so much sense when you say that.
I was thinking I could make something for Cleo when she turns 21, but she'd be like, oh, my God, she'd never read it. She'd be like, so embarrassing.
You should do that. That would be a
maybe good my first grandchild.
Yeah. It's a fair way off, though.
Hopefully.
Now it's time for 10 quick questions with Rachel.
What time do you set your alarm?
I don't have an alarm. Just wake up whenever.
What do you eat for breakfast?
Nothing.
Me neither. It's so bad.
So bad.
What is your most prized possession?
My reading glasses. It's a disaster if I can't find those.
What is the most visited website on your laptop this week? Be honest.
Probably Matches. Matches fashion.
What was the last thing you bought online?
I'm sorry to not be quick. That's really how dumb
no,
I am.
No, that's fine.
I bought something from Scanlon because they just launched their new range.
What is one of your weekly rituals? What's something you do every week?
So Saturday morning, if there's no water polo, but the older your children get, the later their sport is on a Saturday. So all the little kids have games at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, whereas Lucas doesn't have one until sometimes midday, so I just sleep in. My husband gets me a coffee Saturday and Sunday morning in bed. I don't get out of bed until midday.
Oh, my God, I can't wait for that.
It'll happen.
What is your favourite neighbourhood in Sydney?
Can I say two? Where yeah. I live, because there's lots of little kids riding bikes. That's cute. And then Marrickville, where I work.
I like that answer though. It's 9 p.m. on a weeknight. What are you doing?
Probably, sadly, my emails.
This is a common challenge I hear from a lot of creative business people.
But it's the two screen. It's the split screen. I'll pretend that I'm sort of being with the family, but I'm actually doing my emails.
And finally, if you could share one key piece of wisdom or lesson learnt in your career along the way with your younger self, what would it be?
Depending on your personality, but certainly for personality types like myself, I would say process, process, process. So, and same goes with the painting. If you go back to it when it's wet, it's just trouble. So I now, when I want to fire off an email to India causing a bit of trouble, I just process it and I sleep on it. The next day, it's a totally different issue for me. And I think with the painting as well, when it's being troublesome, I just walk away and I leave it, I process it for a bit, come back to it. I just give things time to sort of settle and let the dust settle a little. That would be my advice.
That's such good advice. I'm going to take that myself. Thank you so much, Rachel. It's been such a pleasure chatting to you.
Thanks, Lucy.
To suss Rachel's beautiful bed linen, soft furnishings and artwork, visit the Castle website at castleandthings.com.au. On Instagram, you can follow Rachel at rachelcastleandthings, all one word. We recently featured Rachel's insanely beautiful family home in Sydney, which was one of our most popular homes to date. You can revisit that story via the link in our show notes. Or if you're looking at the Enhanced podcast, you'll be seeing some photos right now. We also featured Rachel's daily routine in our Extraordinary Routines column a couple of years ago. That story is well worth revisiting too via the link in our show notes. You've been listening to TDF Talks, a fortnightly podcast from The Design Files. As always, all the links we've discussed today can be found in our show notes at thedesignfiles.net/podcast. Of course, you can also visit our main website, thedesignfiles.net, where we post new stories 3 times a day featuring Australian design, art, architecture and more. Thank you so much for tuning in, and if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to TDF Talks on iTunes. Thanks for listening.